Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's season 8, episode 44, and the Steelers are coming off a bye, Dave. It's Colts week, an up-and-down Colts team. We do not have a beat writer today, unfortunately. We got a little logistically jammed in, so we've got some feelers out, and hopefully we will have that for you on Friday. So sorry for the change in the schedule. But we'll go ahead and talk about what happened yesterday with Mike Tomlin. We'll talk about the defense today after our kind of in-depth look at the first half of the season for the offense. We'll get through a bunch of other things along with some more listener emails, some questions that they had. And, of course, Friday we'll get into hopefully the breakdown of the Colts, our picks, and a variety of other things. So, Dave, bye week is gone. The Steelers back at it. They practiced Monday. And Mike Tomlin spoke yesterday. So why don't we start with Mike Tomlin? And I thought Mike was a little more verbose, not that we had any earth-shattering news, but a little more verbose and talkative than I expected.
Yeah. He talked about starting off with things that they were able to accomplish during the bye week and some of these younger players being able to get some valuable time. Guys like Joshua Dobbs, guys like Cameron Sutton, being able to get a little bit of extra practice time, and I would assume that would be mostly on Monday and Tuesday of last week, and then Monday of this week. It sounds like Ben. They kind of to hear Randy Feetner talk a few days ago that Ben was pretty much kind of shut down with his arm, just to give him a little bit of rest. And I don't know what stuck out the most to you from what Tomlin had to say. I tell you, one thing that kind of hit home with me was him highlighting the fact that the team is minus one in turnovers through the first through the first eight games. And it'd be fun. I haven't researched this, but I wonder how many teams have gone 6-2 in their first eight games with a minus one, turnover ratio. And I think he highlighted, I think you even hit on this, maybe after the game last week, that, man, if only Ryan Shazier would have gotten that late interception, really would have, not that you didn't already feel kind of good coming out of the game, but, it would have definitely, and I think Tomlin put it best, would have prevented the offense from having to kind of seal the deal, if you will, at the end there. So most definitely. And look, you look at the Steelers' offensive turnovers this year. Ben obviously has 9 interceptions. We talked a little bit about those in the last podcast. That Le'Veon Bell fumble was pretty big in the game against Detroit. I mean, because that was at least going to be probably 3 points. There, and I'm trying to remember what other turnovers this team has had, but on the defensive side of the football, it's good to see them getting some turnovers, but you would like to see some more dramatic ones, I guess, as Tomlin put it.
Yeah, more impactful ones in terms of what they are. And that's certainly something he focused on, as you said, with the young guys. He brought up the injuries. Pretty straightforward stuff so far that we've gotten with the injuries. The expectation for Dave and I, and I think from the conversation, is that Marcus Gilbert and Stephon Tuitt should be back. They did work on Monday. It's unclear what Vance McDonald did on Monday with his knee. And then Mike Mitchell, just early indications here with this Achilles injury. I would expect this to be kind of a multi-week injury. Again, just reading the tea leaves, don't have any inside info on this. But Mitchell coming off late in the game, having the bye week obviously is a benefit. But these types of injuries, again, are if you're shut down for a period of time, they're very rarely kind of very short-term type of injuries. So we'll see. Of course, Wednesday we'll get the first practice report out, Dave, and we'll see what the status is for Mike Mitchell. But those are the two guys to pay attention to, I think, Vance McDonald and Mike Mitchell right up front.
Yeah, and but you know Mike Tomlin kind of left the door open for either I guess Tuitt or Gilbert not to make it back. But you know I think judging by from some of the comments that both those players have made and you know the unofficial practice report kind of from Monday, it would probably take a setback for either one of those players not to play against the Colts. And you know we talked the other day about Jake Rogers being released from the practice squad, and obviously that's a good sign. Vance McDonald, boy, if there's one player that on off offense that you would really like to see back this week, and a guy that you would really like to see be more impactful in the passing game, it's Vance McDonald. And as you stated with Mike Mitchell, you know, after Mike Tomlin talked, he said, look, we shut him down completely last week. We'll start revving him back up this week. I didn't get a warm, really fuzzy feeling about him being available for the Colts game, so we'll see about that. It sure would be nice to have to break out the cakes or and the party horns here for talking about how all 22 guys on the field at one time. There used to be my parents used to have a poster up in the house growing up as a kid saying just when you think you're about to have both it was a frog jumping from lily pad to lily pad, and the legs about to come together, and it says just when you think you're about to have both ends come together, someone moves one of the ends. And it just seems like that's the case with the Steelers and trying to get all 22 guys, guys that you thought were going to be the starters this year on both sides of the football on the field at one time. Now, I'm not complaining because the Steelers obviously have been very, very, very fortunate when it comes to injuries there. Ooh, that sounded like an iPhone. We'll see about Mike Mitchell in so many words, and I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, okay, so moving forward from there, the obvious situation would be Robert Golden would be the guy, and then J.J. Wilcox, kind of a swing guy in there. We'll see how that plays out. But, you know, Golden's been a guy, and we'll get into this when we get into the defensive breakdowns, who has been, certainly up and down during his time when he's gotten the opportunity. You know, we talk about his initial appearance against the Cowboys a bunch of years ago in Dallas where – you know, made some mistakes, didn't look like he was totally comfortable with the defense, seemed to kind of progress a bit forward after that during his career, not getting a ton of opportunities, but being on the field now and then. And then last year, not Robert Golden's best performance, and really a guy that you didn't want to have on the field, certainly was my feeling about it, a guy who I thought might kind of work his way to be a Will Allen type in later in his career, be a serviceable starter. And I think he struggled a lot last year. We didn't see a lot from him, but he was on the field in that Lions game for the last 20 or 30 snaps defensively. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. And Dave, just, you know, initial reaction, comfort level with Robert Golden back there.
Well, Matthew Marchie has a little short, synopsis on a film room of some of his snaps from that game against the Lions, and he played okay. Some listening to this podcast will say, well, Mike Mitchell's just okay too, So, I would rather have Mike Mitchell back there. I'd feel a lot more confident. Especially, look, things that we don't see and aren't privy to is the type of communication that happens, with a free safety on the field. And Mike Mitchell is kind of known more of a good field general, if you will, and making sure that these, the younger guys are lined up in the right spot. And I'm not so sure you can say that you know, at least I don't think, and it's just speculation on my part, that you just don't get that kind of sense or feeling when Robert Golden is out there. Now, it should be, as long as he's been around this team, you would think he would be able to recite the playbook backwards to you. But in general, I have more comfort with Mike Mitchell on the field. Real quick,
it's why Mike Mitchell's the starter, right? I mean, he's the better player.
Right. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but when you kind of look ahead past this season, Mike Mitchell, final year of his contract, 2018, set to earn $5 million. You got a guy like J.J. Wilcox, who really is more, should be viewed more as a strong safety than a free safety type, going to earn, over $3 million. It doesn't sound, would you bet that both those players are going to be back in 2018? That's the first question.
Were you asking about Wilcox and Golden or Mitchell and who were you asking?
Mitchell and Wilcox.
I would think Mike Mitchell will be back. I think the Steelers will let him play out the year. I certainly safety will be somewhere, I think, in the top four rounds. They'll go safety. It doesn't mean they won't go their first round. I just think it'll be a defensive priority, maybe the defensive priority for the Steelers to go. You know, you look at inside linebacker and your safety, those would probably be right now from where we sit the priorities on the defensive side of the ball. So I think Mitchell will be back. Total wild card on Wilcox and somewhat still on Golden. I think Golden's special teams value is still there. And for the money he's making, you can carry him for a long time as long as he doesn't have any deterioration physically. So I would say very high on Golden being back, very high on Mitchell being back, and Wilcox, I think, is a 50-50 type of guy.
Let me ask you this, too, and I know this has probably crossed the minds of a few listeners out there. Carnell Lake spoke to the media last, this during the bye week there as well, too. And, this is one area where I wish he would have been asked about. I didn't see him being asked about it, and he probably wouldn't have given much of an answer anyway. What do you think about the possibility of Brian Allen moving to free safety?
I would think so. In situations like this, I think he is too much of a developmental player. He's too young with potential upside where he is, with more value at corner if he can develop into a solid player. So he's not going to be a guy who starts at safety next year. I don't see any time in the short term, being through next training camp, the Steelers looking to transition anything with him. They'll continue to work him and develop him at this position, see if he takes that step forward next year, and then reevaluate after year two. So I don't think that's on the table yet.
Now, remember that when he switched from wide receiver at Utah, he moved to safety and then had to move to corner, I believe. That was the progression there. He hasn't spent a lot of time really overall as a defensive back, and he was kind of a height, weight, speed guy when the Steelers drafted him. And if you try to read the tea leaves right now, one would think, and that's dangerous, I guess, to do, that Cameron Sutton might be penciled in to be a future outside guy. I mean, they've got a nice find there in Mike Hilton. You wouldn't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. He could probably, relieve William Gay, inside moving forward. And then there's Joe Hayden, and that's another quick thing I wanted to get to here. I mean, Joe Hayden been a nice addition to the Steelers. There's no doubt about it. He's playing a little bit better than I thought he would. However, he hasn't been tested much in man coverage. We'll know how good this secondary is come week 15 of the season against the Patriots. That's the one all of us have circled on the calendar there. But with a $10 million owed to Joe Hayden in 2018, I think he has $1 million roster bonus due him in March. As we sit here at the midway point of this season, is Joe Hayden going to be a Steeler in 2018?
I think he is, for lack of an alternative. Now, I just don't look. If this will be showtime for Cam Sutton here, and if Cam Sutton comes on, and they feel like there's enough there, then, you know, maybe the equation changes. But I would say today I would bet on Hayden being a Steeler. But it is a big number. If you feel like Cam Sutton's a guy who can – and the Steelers probably have a sense of Cam Sutton, not a good one, but they have some sense of who he is going through the mini camps, the OTAs, the preseason, you know, the little bit of preseason that he got. And then they'll certainly get a look here. I would expect them to activate him. I would expect, you know, my guess is right now that Cody Sensabaugh gets released sometime in the next 3 weeks when Sutton gets activated, barring anybody else being injured. So you take a good hard look. But, yeah, I think the point is I'll say yes, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no, however, comma, not at that number. No, I don't know. I mean, he's up there in age. And
look, Dave, what are the rules? Remind me of the rules. If the Steelers, are they allowed to just restructure the deal? Is that allowed? I'm just trying to remember the rules for, you know, vested veterans. Are there any specific rules that if you release him, you can't sign him for a period of time or anything like that?
Well, you could. I mean, you could obviously release him and then, you know, signing back, but I mean, if Joe Hayden hits the free agency, he's going to sign with somebody else.
But you can restructure the deal. Can you restructure him down? Is what I'm asking.
Well, you can turn that base. What you can do is you can you know, add years onto his contract.
Right.
You know, turn his base salary into a signing bonus, and, you know, there, you know, you could pull a Troy Polamalu on him, you know.
Right.
You know, add some kind of fake years, if you will. You know, he's still going to get the $10 million. He's still going to get the $10 million he has coming to him. You know, if he hangs around in 2018, it's just, are you willing to keep him around and create maybe some some future dead money, you know, things with him by doing so. He will not be on the 2018 roster with whatever it is, an $11 million cap hit, because this team's going to have to find a way to clear some cap space quick during the offseason, and especially if they put a franchise tag on Le'Veon Bell. So if he finishes out the season good, has a couple of interceptions there, then I could see an instance where, you know, you sign him to one of those extensions where you try to cut his cap number down in half, and then say, okay, if we can get another year out of him, great. Another 2 years out of him, even greater. But know that 2018 might be his final season, you know, said, you know, when the smoke clears there. So that's how I'll kind of look at that. And like you said, you know, if Cameron Sutton comes on, you know, where are you going to play him? Because, you know,
he's not going to get on the field. He's not going to get on the field.
Not this year, but next year you got to find a way to get him on the field, I think.
Well, Will Gay's gone, and Cam Sutton is going to be, you know, look, you're going to, and that's the question. Does Joe Hayden stick around for another year? Is Joe Hayden look, I like Mike Hilton a lot. He has been one of the big surprises, no question. Will Joe Hayden, could he ever move inside? You wonder if that's a possibility as he gets older. Is that something that you would think about? Do you carry Hayden for another year? Because you wouldn't say this is a completely lost year for Sutton, but if he ends up being, you know, a guy you say he projects to be our starter in 2019, I don't think that's the end of the world. You say, okay, we'll carry Hayden for this year. He's going to get some of this money, but we know where we're going to go. And, you know, we can draft corners in the third, fourth, fifth round going forward without having to spend a first or second round pick on a corner, because, you know, we feel comfortable with where we are.
And then it rolls back, I think, back around to the way I kind of wanted to start this with Brian Allen. If you bring Joe Hayden, if you keep Joe Hayden in 2018, and you have Cameron Sutton, and you have Mike Hilton, and you obviously have Artie Burns, I think there should be some talk in there, and be one of the things I would expect Carnell Lake to be asked about is, you know, is there a possibility that Brian Allen could be the future heir to the, you know, Mike Mitchell throne? I mean, obviously, when the games that Brian Allen's been active this year, He's only played special teams, but they have enough confidence in him to play on special teams, meaning they think he's a good, at least a, an average to above average tackler. And you know, he's more of a free safety, you would think, with his size, speed, and all like that, than he is maybe a strong safety candidate at that. So that's kind of how all that marries together there. And look, I mean, if you do that, maybe you don't have to spend a draft pick on an early draft pick on a safety this time around.
Yeah, you're way higher on Brian Allen's future than I am. I'd say it's more likely that Brian Allen's not with the team 2 years from now than he's kind of got a big role as a safety in the secondary. Just can't, this guy's a fifth-round pick. They drafted him because his measurables are really good, as you pointed out. Doesn't have a lot of experience, so he's going to have to take big strides, because you get guys like Cam Sutton. They're going to draft a defensive back at some point next year. They're probably going to draft a safety. He's going to be well ahead of Brian Allen in terms of his football knowledge at that position. So, I'd be surprised if he's a big contributor down the road.
All right, while we're talking, before we move forward, and people email and say, how does show preparation go?
Just like this.
You're hearing it right now. this is show preparation. We include it in the show. To peek behind the curtain, there really is no curtain, folks. I mean, we get on, we talk about 2 minutes, let's kind of cover this, but it goes off the rail. And I think that's the beauty about what you and I do, David, is we're not married to kind of a structure here. we kind of go chase rabbits down holes, and sometimes if you're good enough about catching me by the leg and pulling me out, the show can stay on track there. But Mike Tomlin did mention Joshua Dobbs yesterday, and how it seemed he went out of the way to say, we got Joshua Dobbs some work, and he got some good work in. And I was thinking about this last night. Want to kind of hit on this. A lot of our listeners out there are like, okay, Ben's going to retire after this year. We got to go out and get Kirk Cousins. And if we don't, then the Steelers have to spend another an early draft pick and get the guy to be the heir to Ben Roethlisberger. My question is. And it's obvious, why do you think so many people have given up on Joshua Dobbs already, and should they?
Well, I think the answer is, if you're comparing Joshua Dobbs and Kirk Cousins or any of the other guys who are going to be free agents, if you've got a guy who has done it in the NFL, who's proven to be at least an average NFL quarterback, then that's a completely different situation. You say, who's going to be your starter next year? Obviously, everybody who watches the game of football would feel more comfortable with Kirk Cousins rather than the unknown that Josh Dobbs is. Now, it's not, again, I hammered people in their evaluation of Kirk Cousins because I think they look at him and say, well, he was a fourth-round draft pick. We talked about it on Monday. Brady was a sixth-round pick. Prescott's a fourth-round. Look, your pick doesn't matter once you've been picked. Go into camp, prove yourself, and you're evaluated by what you do on the field. We've seen Dobbs. We've seen limited stuff. My expectation is not that Josh Dobbs is going to be a world beater. There's some people out there who cover the Steelers who think today Landry Jones could be, a back end of the NFL starting quarterback, better than some of the guys you're seeing playing. And, we saw Landry Jones throw a terrible first pass in that New England game last year down the right sideline, where he had an open receiver and it got picked off. But Landry Jones played pretty well the rest of that game. So, look, the hierarchy is it's Ben, it's Landry Jones and Dobbs. And I wouldn't assume that if the Steelers if they don't draft a quarterback next year, which, as we move into the offseason, we'll hammer that point forever, I'm sure. If they don't draft a quarterback, I would expect Landry Jones to stay ahead of Josh Dobbs.
Here's the thing with Jay, and look, I watched a lot of film on Joshua Dobbs after he was drafted, and he's got the arm strength. He's got the smarts, obviously. He's got the athleticism to be one of these kind of, Jacoby Brissett's You know, it's too early to say a Dak Prescott. I'll put it to you this way. I don't get, because we haven't seen. I'll say this. Just because what you saw during the preseason on Joshua Dobbs should not have you wanting to throw him out with the bathwater just yet. I mean, it was just very, very simple stuff. And look at the supporting cast that he was forced to play with during the preseason. That preseason probably went just like everybody in the Steelers organization thought it might with Joshua Dobbs, okay? But I think there's still more there. If Ben does retire, I don't think they're going after Kirk Cousins. If you're not going after Kirk Cousins, I mean, who are you really going to go after? And if that's the case, I think you would turn to Landry Jones in that situation with the idea that maybe Joshua Dobbs can push him at that point. And to be quite honest with you, David, as we sit here right now, I will be surprised if the Steelers draft a quarterback with the first four picks.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree. Unless Ben clearly says he is not coming back, I don't think the Steelers are going quarterback at all. I don't think they'll draft a quarterback if Ben says he's coming, if he's going to play.
I don't think they will, even if he says he's retiring right out of the chute. I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback within the first four rounds. Now, you can obviously try to add another arm, a third quarterback. You know, fifth, sixth.
Well, you gotta add one some way, because they're not going to go to training camp with two quarterbacks. So
right. I mean, you know, and maybe you get a cast off, or to come in and compete for the number three. But that's just where I am on the quarterback situation. I just hate, and look, I, you know, no posters hanging up in my room of Joshua Dobbs. I just think that people just are instantly judging him by the limited, you know, by the preseason work that he had, and I think there's more there than what many people are crediting him for, and I think the organization might be a little higher on him than most people probably listening to this podcast are.
Yeah, no doubt. And look, no, we're not going to get to see him do anything until next August, ideally. I mean, that's, you know, nobody wants to see him on the field because that signals bad things from the injury perspective for the Steelers the rest of this year. So the book for everybody outside the organization isn't going to change for a long time, but the story will certainly at the quarterback position will revolve around Ben and his commitment. And, you know, Ben's going to take some time, but I think anybody as a member of the organization for 13, 14, 15 years, there's a relationship with the Rooney family and with Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert. And just like Heath Miller, I don't think the Steelers are going to go into free agency and the draft unaware of where Ben is. And, you know, there's a lot of money on the table for him. I I've said it all along. He's not walking away in my book. I'll eat the crow and give the mea culpa, but I'll be as shocked as anybody if Ben Roethlisberger again isn't a quarterback next year. So.
And here's one other thing on that. Yeah, Roethlisberger, I think, is due a $5 million roster bonus in March. So you're going to...
Yeah, that'll clear things up quickly.
You're going to know real quick on him. And before I climb completely out of this rabbit hole, halfway through the season now, will Le'Veon Bell get the franchise tag, David, at $14.54 million? Next off season.
Yeah, two different questions. Will he and should he? And I have wavered on this and thought back, I would say a year ago to 6 months ago, that he would not. And I would probably lean that he will. And, you know, the Steelers, they drafted James Conner. I don't know that James Conner is the heir apparent. I don't know that they need to draft a running back if they slap the franchise tag on Le'Veon Bell. I am convinced, and I'm 100% convinced of this, the Steelers will not reach a long-term deal with Le'Veon Bell. If he turned down what they offered him, this was never confirmed, but numbers were put out there as to what the Steelers offered Le'Veon Bell in the neighborhood of $50 million over 4 years with, you know, a pretty solid guarantee number that franchise go to the market. He wasn't going to get all that much more money, but I feel very strongly that he will not sign a long-term deal with the Steelers. So I think the Steelers will go ahead and slap a franchise tag on him and not feel the need to draft a running back, in the first two rounds, because we've seen running backs come in and start right away for a variety of NFL teams. So you don't have to have the seasoning so they can look down the road. So I would lean now, no long-term deal, kind of 95%, and franchise tag, yes, at 70%.
Boy, that you look at their, you start looking ahead at their cap situation, and if you believe reports that they were prepared to pay him $30 million over the first 2 years of that deal that he didn't sign, and you would say, well, they're getting off cheap by only paying him $27 million over the first two years with back-to-back tags. I don't know. There's something about just looking at that looking at that cap number of $14.54 million that makes you kind of especially with the usage that, I mean, this is a guy that could have over 400 touches this year.
Give him 400 more next year and shake hands and say goodbye.
Yeah, but then you wonder, how many backs have come off of 400 touch seasons and been able to do that a couple years in a row, kind of thing. You just start looking at the numbers and looking at the stats and usage and how most running back situations are around the league are fungible, if you will. I'm gonna say right now, David, my prediction right now, I definitely don't think he's going to get a long-term deal if he is franchised. And I don't even remember where I was at the start of the season on him. But, man, I'm leaning towards not franchising him, David, right now, to be quite honest with you.
You're leaning toward not doing it, or you're leaning toward the Steelers not doing it?
Both, as I like to say.
Fair enough. Okay, so let's take a look at the defense, the defensive side of the ball. As if you missed our podcast on Monday, we went through the offense, and the kind of the way we evaluated things is not, are guys having a good season or a bad season. It's versus the expectations of where we thought they would be coming into the season. So obviously you can look at guys like Antonio Brown, and I think our answer was Antonio Brown's playing as expected. Now, Antonio Brown's playing as well as any receiver in the NFL, and he's the elite receiver for the Steelers and has been for a long time, and he's going to be a Hall of Famer. But, this is kind of what we've come to expect. So that's just as a background to how we talk about things. So, Dave, let's talk about the D-line, and I'll let you tee up the D-line first, because I think it's an interesting unit, and I think it's interesting how the Steelers have populated the defensive line. So go ahead, tee it up with where you think they are this year.
Well, expectations were obviously high for this unit, right? And they should have been. I mean, you got Cameron Hayward, Stephon Tuitt. You got pedigree picks in there. So they were the expectations were high. And I'll say this, and Tuitt's even missed quite a few games.
What's he missed now? Three? He missed the second game. The opener? The two plays in, he goes out. So he missed that game, and he's missed the last two.
Well, he missed two two in total with a biceps injury. He came back,
right.
and then has missed. He was hurt before the Cincinnati game. Missed that game, and then missed the game against the Lions. So
he's missed five.
Well, almost five full ones, really. Because you have
what did Hayward miss last year? Seven, the last seven or eight. I mean, kind of the second half of the season, roughly.
Yeah, well, I forget if he missed a game after injuring that hamstring against the Jets, and then of course I think he injured the triceps against the Cowboys, and that was what, week 10, and then lost the rest of the season there. I'll put you this way: all things considered, games missed and all like that, I still think this defensive line has played slightly above expectations. And I'm going to say that because of Tyson Alualu, I think really has filled in admirably with Tuitt down. And because he has kind of maybe exceeded a few expectations there, and I think LT Walton in some limited snaps has played well. I know that there's been some snaps missed by Tuitt, but I'm going to say they've actually kind of exceeded expectations with the group there.
I'm with you, and I would lean more to the overwhelming positive steps that Javon Hargrave has taken as a step forward. I'm with you on Alualu. I think You know, again, a guy who had pedigree, but the Steelers got on the cheap. He did wasn't a dominant guy in Jacksonville. And, you know, look at Jacksonville's D-line talent. It's hard to, you know, say anything that, you know, they made a mistake. But he's asked to step in, and he has done a more than capable job. But Javon Hargrave is, to me, a guy who is slowly getting on the national radar. It's really hard, you know, if you're not Brandon Williams or if you haven't been in the past, Haloti Ngata, or you go back to we talk about the great nose tackles over since the game changed. What would you say, Dave? The end of the era would be kind of when the Steelers transitioned their guys, when they all kind of moved out from the Super Bowl years. The dominant defensive nose tackle has not been a thing, and Javon Hargrave is a guy who is, I think, as much along the lines of a type of player as Geno Atkins and Aaron Donald, more so that type of player than kind of the prototypical nose guard. And he has been fantastic this year. He's not going to get Pro Bowl he's not going to get Pro Bowl recognition. But his development, I think, has been, to me, one of the most exciting things on this team. And maybe I would say he is the guy who has. He was a good player last year. I don't want to mischaracterize this. He was a good player last year, but I think he has passed both Artie Burns and Sean Davis, not in terms of snaps because of the nature of his position, but in terms of being the best of the three at what they're doing right now.
Yeah, that's fair. And, oh, boy, just think if Stephon Tuitt can stay healthy during these final eight games. I mean, here's the thing. You have enough confidence now that when assuming Tuitt does make it back starting this week, you can actually feel good about during games getting Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt off the field for a series here and there and save them for the stretch run. So I think that's key. So, Hargrave playing great. And make no mistake, in the limited snaps that Tuitt has played this year, there's been some OMG moments in there with him.
Yeah, I like where they are. LT Walton is a serviceable fifth defensive lineman. Dave, I've been meaning to ask you this question for a couple weeks now, and somebody suggested, you know, we should have a conversation on Mondays about if you could ask Mike Tomlin something at the press conference now that I'm not there, what would you ask him? And this is a philosophical question. Would you feel, when you look at teams like the Eagles and the Jags, and now I understand it's different when you're running a 4-3, but I don't think conceptually it's necessarily all that different. Defensive lineman depth, we've seen it with the Bengals. We've seen a lot of teams carry, and again, 4-3 defenses are going to carry more guys just because more position spots. But we've seen them carry a ton of guys and play a ton of guys. Are you – like if the Steelers went and – would you be in favor of the Steelers drafting a defensive lineman high, say next year, say in the second round, so that Tuitt and Hayward, instead of playing 70 out of 75 snaps, played 50 out of 75 snaps, and you got another guy that you hoped would be their caliber player, and he could play 40 snaps a game? Do you think the guys are playing too many snaps, and you're better having, you know, fresher guys, or if you got a stud, let them play every snap?
I think if you have a stud, well, not no to every snap for any player, you know, on the defensive line. But
Aaron Donald.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's that's a different realm, right? I mean, you could call Cameron Hayward your Aaron Donald, right?
I agree, and Stephon Tuitt. I think and the question is, you know, would you take them off the field if you had a guy who was, you know, a budding Stephon Tuitt and Cam Hayward? Would they be better?
I would take them off the field on extended drives. If you have a drive that gets into the 10, 8, 9, 10, then I would try to give them a break, because especially if you're in a hurry up situation, 2 minutes left in the half, 4 minutes left in the game. Now, obviously, you're saying, well, Dave, you want to put your best player off the field 4 minutes left in the game. It depends on how much workload they've had earlier in the game, I think. Do you really want a guy out there that's played in some of these games where there's maybe 70 defensive snaps? Do you really want – I mean, how effective can a guy like Tuitt or Hayward be, you know, snap 67, 68, you know, in those situations? In short, I'm a fan of getting guys like Hayward and Tuitt off the field as much as possible, assuming they're long drive situations. Now, if there's 6, 7, 8 play drives, and that's what it is, and you know, there's no sudden changes, you know, that's another thing, sudden change situations. You know, if you're not turning the football over, you know, back-to-back interceptions in Jacksonville, you know, your defense is getting a little bit of rest. You know, the best defense is a good offense, right? I mean,
sure, keep them off the field.
You know, playing cheerleader is the best spot some of these guys can be in. Any defense can be is playing cheerleader. So, I mean, you're paying these guys for a reason, right? They should be expected to play 100% of the snaps, but that just because they should be expected to play it doesn't mean that I'm not gonna try to carve out five snaps for both those guys to get off the field.
Yeah, I generally agree with all of that. Okay, so yeah, I'm with you. Exceeded expectations. We'll see if Tuitt can stay out there. That would be a big plus. You know, we haven't seen, you think about it, over the past year, we haven't seen a lot of Hayward and Tuitt on the field together, with Tuitt's injuries this year and Hayward missing the second half of last year. And really, you know, you think about before that, Tuitt didn't immediately step on the field as the guy who was starting it when he was drafted. So if they had an extended run here, that would be a benefit to the Steelers because, you know, that really hadn't existed. Linebackers.
Who's going to have the most sacks? I mean, who's going to be the most impactful of the two, Hayward or Tuitt, when we look at negative plays, stuff, sacks? You know, if we throw all that into a formula there between Hayward and Tuitt, who's going to be the most disruptive, effective player during the second half?
Over the next 8 games?
Right.
It's a great question, and I'll just say, I mean, I don't mean it to be a cop-out. I'll say identical, both very productive. I think both these guys are really good players in the top quarter of the league at their position. So, I mean, I think they're elite guys. I think they're both Pro Bowl caliber players. You know, it's never going to happen that they both make it. They're not, you know, they're not pure edge guys that they're going to get 8 or 10 sacks and get that type of recognition, but they are that good. So I'll just say they'll both be productive, and I'll say the between them, how about this? I'll say between them in the last 8 games, this is a big number. I'll say they get double-digit sacks between them.
Wow. I think 8 is a good number to be an over-under on. And I'll say 9 between the two. And you're right. The correct answer to my question is yes.
Yeah, right. Okay. let's get to the linebackers. And I'll tee this one up.
Why don't you split them up, outside and inside?
Okay. Let's start with the inside guys. And, you know, this is not a no-brainer call. My answer is going to be as expected and for, you know, kind of slightly different reasons. This is the third year now. Well, I've been touting Ryan Shazier as Defensive Player of the Year. And there are some people who cover games nationally and some announcers who throw this out there. He's not going to be the Defensive Player of the Year this year. But I think people realize that Ryan Shazier runs as well as any linebacker in the league, maybe better than Luke Kuechly in terms of just pure speed. Kuechly's a better inside linebacker today than Ryan Shazier. I'll say I am probably a little bit lower on Ryan Shazier's performance this year than a lot of the national people. I think his kind of national profile is blowing up because the Steelers defensively are statistically a much better team than they have been. And Shazier is seen as, you know, with Cam probably the best player on that defense. So he's getting some of the national love. But, you know, in those games where the Steelers struggled, and particularly the Chicago game, the negative for Ryan Shazier is one, just very simply one thing, is sometimes his speed and his recognition gets him in trouble because he doesn't hit the right gap, or he's slow to break down to make a tackle more technically, and we'll just get an arm on a guy who's in the backfield and away he goes. And the Bears game was just, missing gaps, not sound on gap assignment, exposed him. Is he an elite player? Yes, he's an elite player, but he needs to take that hole out of his game to be the best player on the Steelers defense and the best player at that position. Vince Williams, I think, has been a tad better than I expected. So the balance for me for the two is as expected. Vince Williams is a dominant physical type player that I think the Steelers are, I think for the first time in a long time, using him correctly. For whatever reason, back in the Sean Spence era, having Vince on for passing downs and Sean Spence on for running downs seemed to be the most curious, odd decision that the Steelers made in terms of personnel. And Vince is a physical, two down attack the line of scrimmage linebacker, and he's shown that he can do that more than adequately.
Yeah, I'll go with you with the as expected. And I think Vince playing a little bit better than maybe what I thought he would, combined with maybe Shazier missing a few more tackles and maybe not having the amount of stuffs. Let's face it, Ryan Shazier should probably have about 15 to 20 more tackles than he has right now, maybe, so I think both those players combine, and I think if you throw in there Tyler Matakavich and L.J. Fort, and they're limited. Let's face it, Matakavich and L.J. Fort haven't really been in the few snaps. They are the two.
Their touchdown per snap, touchdown against per snap, is leading the NFL, I am sure.
Oh, yeah, they're in Terrence Garvin territory. That poor guy seemed like every time he got on the field, they gave up a touchdown. And because obviously those times were only in the red zone, and we've seen at least two touchdowns, right? The Bears and what was the other game?
Cincinnati.
The Cincinnati game where they got on the field and they gave up touchdowns there on almost on identical plays there. I think you lump all that together, and of course leaving special teams out of it, I think it's just as expected.
Yeah. Okay. So on the edge, I'm going to say slightly below expectations. And we've seen T.J. Watt's athleticism. I think T.J. Watt can develop into a hell of a player. He was dynamic in the preseason. He has made some dynamic plays starting, look, he announced his presence with authority in week one with a couple sacks and an interception. But T.J. Watt's been less dynamic here into the middle of the season. He has not been a dominating player. He has been, and I'll say the same for Bud Dupree, massively high expectations. Bud Dupree's speed and agility. I don't know who wrote the article, Dave. I don't know if it was Alex or Matthew. Just put an article up on SteelersDepot.com, I think yesterday, about limited moves in terms of how he rushes the passer. Bud's mostly a speed guy coming around the edge. He got some pressure in that Cincinnati game when the Bengals were, it was chuck and duck time because the O-line was getting killed and the Bengals were way behind. But he has not been as much of a playmaker as I expected. So those two guys need to make more impact plays. They're young. I'll give them that. But I even expected more than we've seen so far, with taking into account their youth.
And let's not forget that Watt's having to drop a lot into coverage, so that takes away. And he's great in that. I mean, you want to talk about a guy that can get some depth in those flat, in those flat drops. It's him. Look, I mean, you go back and you look at his college sacks with Watt. How many times do we see him just thoroughly blow it up on the outside? Not many. A lot of those sacks weren't, a lot of them were twisting inside and things like that, and cleanups, if you will. I think he is as advertised, and I think he's going to get better. I think he's going to be a much better pass rusher than Bud Dupree is. I was hoping for a little bit more out of Bud Dupree as we sit here 8 games into the season. And I think Alex did a great job by going over, you know, all of his snaps through the halfway point here. You just don't right now, if you're an opposing team, do you think, oh my God, here comes the duo of TJ Watt and Bud Dupree? You know, it just doesn't strike fear. Now it's more to pass rush than just those two guys. You know, when you have guys like Hayward and Tuitt and Hargrave and things like that, it makes it infinitely better, if you will. But just looking at those two guys as individuals, I think Watt is what I think people should say, well, he's right on pace to what we thought he might be, and that we should expect him to get even better during the second half of the season. Dupree, though, man, I was kind of hoping for, you know, 8 to 10 sacks out of him this year. Are we going to get that? You know, are they going to be cleanup sacks? You know, sacks are sacks, but they're not all created equal, if you will. So I'm going to say, and you know, Chickalo, you know, James Harrison hasn't played much. Moats hasn't played much. I'm going to say just slightly less than what I hoped for.
Yeah. Okay. So we're on the same page there. The defensive backs, we'll start with the corners, and let's include Mike Hilton and William Gay, the slot corners in this group. And you know, again, this is one of those situations for me where I think the numbers and the eye test don't completely match up. Artie Burns, I think, has been okay, but not more than okay in terms of being a first-round pick and taking a step forward. When you see look, when guys get taken in the top 10 or 15 picks in the draft, there's generally a reason. And you see the elite guys of the past couple of years, Jalen Ramsey goes fifth. Marshawn Lattimore, if you've had a chance to watch him play at all this year, he goes 12th. They're elite corners. And we've seen corners taken up top fail. I mean, tons of them fail. You go through the list every year, and there are a lot of guys. So Artie Burns has been a good pick for the Steelers at 25. The fact that he came in last year and stabilized the right side of the defense, he has done that as well this year. But I don't think of Artie Burns as a lockdown corner. I think of Artie Burns as a league average corner right now. And I think of Joe Hayden as maybe a little above a league average corner because of his experience, but he's no longer an elite corner. So I think the Steeler corner is okay. The reason they've been better, you know, the reason I might say slightly better than expected is Mike Hilton has been so far off the charts better than what I thought they would have in the slot this year. And as much as his tackling and ability to blitz the quarterback as anything being the difference in pushing that on the plus side for me, Dave, as opposed to, you know, as expected or slightly below expectations.
Yeah, look, Artie Burns, I think, is right where I thought he might be, maybe right now. I mean, I'd like to see him still play better against the run. I think against Detroit, weren't those his first run tackles of the season, maybe? Joe Hayden, I think Joe Hayden can play maybe a little bit better against the run. All that thrown into a bottle. I think Joe Hayden has been better, slightly better than what I thought he would be. Hilton, I think, better than what I thought he would be. I think Gay's had some decent snaps so far this season, and Burns really outside of. I mean, you look at some breakdowns in the game against the Chiefs, right? Late in the fourth quarter against the Chiefs, you look at some deep passes allowed by both really Hayden and really the secondary as a whole in a game against Detroit. Is that more of a great quarterback, you know, issue and scheme getting beat, you know, issue? I think when you throw all that together, I think you get slightly better than expected.
Okay, so we ended up at the same place, largely for the same reasons. And then let's go to the safeties, Sean Davis and Mike Mitchell.
As expected, I think. as expected. I mean, this team isn't giving up a lot of big plays overall. I mean, Sean Davis has made some. Look at that play on Eric Ebron. Against the Lions. I mean, he's good for a couple of. Seems like he's had what, two touchdown saving plays this season. Mike Mitchell's not going to the Pro Bowl, but I mean, has Mike Mitchell been awful? I mean, obviously you can circle back and say, man, if he doesn't get that personal foul penalty on Alex Smith, does that extra 15 yards make a difference maybe in that game that they ended up winning anyway? Their safeties have not been awful. So I didn't expect them to be awful coming into the season. So I'll say as expected.
Yeah, maybe my expectations weren't in line, and that's certainly something to consider. I expected Sean Davis and Artie Burns to be a little bit better than they have been so far this year. Now, I will say Sean Davis was, I think, not good some of the early games, and he's been at times very good in some of the later games. So we've seen that improvement as the season's gone on. So, yeah, I'll generally give you as expected as well to this point. And then special teams. So my quick assessment is, because we'll just break it down in three ways. For me, Boswell, he's a great kicker, and he's been a great kicker, and he continues to be a great kicker. It has been not a good season for Jordan Berry. He's, I would say, kind of well below my expectations. And the return game, as low as my expectations have been, it has been even worse than I expected. I think the coverage units have been fine. The return game continues to be a disaster.
Yeah, just no return game to even. I mean, what did we even expect from the return game? You know, maybe we thought Eli Rogers could stick his head in there and maybe do a little something. That hasn't happened. That they got out of the chute quick with that punt block against the
fourth play of the season, right?
You know, against the Browns. But really, what has happened since? Boswell's missed. How many has Boswell missed? One or two this year?
A couple, yeah.
Then there was the block against who was it? The Bears, was it that could have been?
Yeah, the return.
The return there. I'll say a little less than. I don't know. I mean, I didn't have high hopes for him anyway, so I'll say I'll take the cop out as expected.
Yeah, just some drive numbers from Football Outsiders on where the defense is as a group. Because as a group, I think I would certainly say probably a little better than expected in terms of what they've done. Yards per drive, the Steelers are fourth in the NFL in yards against per drive. Points per drive, they're second. Turnovers per drive, with one being good, the Steelers are 10th in generating turnovers. The average start position for teams, other opponents, is the 28-yard line, which is about the middle of the pack. Plays per drive, 5.5. That's ninth in the NFL. And time of possession for drive is 2:30 for opponents. That's eighth in the NFL. And then DSR is drive success rate, which is either they get a first down or they get a touchdown. Any first down calls it a success. Only 63% of drives for other teams result in that, and that's third best in the NFL for the Steelers. The defense, they at times have bent, and they certainly bent a hell of a lot in the Detroit game, which is the concern going forward when they face a good passing offense. But the at the end of the day numbers, they are very good.
The defense, we expected the defense to be better as a whole this year. But really, I mean, you go back to some of those long runs that they've given up this year. And I know it's not right to cherry pick, but if you take a few of those long runs out. You know, that they've had against them this year. This defense is, we talked about a couple podcasts ago. I think it's fair to compare this unit, although slightly different time. The flex tight ends weren't really in vogue in 2008. Sort of even a different era, if you will, 2008 to 2017. But I think it's fair right now to kind of compare this defense to the 2008 unit. And boy, when you look at just statistics as a whole and who this team, you know, the quarterbacks and the opponents this team's going to face during the second half of the season, they could put up better numbers in the second half of the season than they did in the first half of the season, David, without a doubt. And I mean,
second in the league in points against at 16.4, behind only Jacksonville at 14.6.
And a lot of those touchdowns that they've given up this year have come on drives that they've also given up explosive runs on. So limit, cut out the explosive runs, and you're probably not going to give up the touchdowns, you know. So, look, I'm excited with this defense. If this offense just plays a quarter of a book, just improves, you know, a quarter, you know, limits those turnovers and cashes in a couple of more red zone trips during the second half of the season, and the defense plays like many of us think that they can, they could go 7-1. I mean, yeah, 7-1 during the second half of the season. I think there's a possibility. Now, then you wonder, man, this is a game against the Colts coming up, you know, 10-point favorites. They should absolutely – yeah, I know it's on the road. I know Tomlin's history with favored in games, 7 or more touchdowns on the road. It hasn't been great. You look back at the Chicago game. We should be disappointed if they don't cover this spread against the Colts, right?
Yeah, they need to play. They need to put together, 60 minutes. We've seen exceptional halves the last couple games between you go back to Kansas City, you go back to Cincinnati, you go back to Detroit. We have seen them on both sides of the ball put together exceptional halves. We have not seen them put together an exceptional game on either side of the ball or both sides of the ball, obviously, for 60 minutes. Maybe they can do that this week and get it the right direction. Just one other stat for you, Dave. The Steelers were 24th. In third down conversion against last year, they gave up 42.1% of the third downs. That was 24th in the NFL. This year, 31.6. That's fourth best in the NFL. That's a massive difference. They've been able to get off the field. If you remember the things that Dave and I have talked about the last 4, 5, 6 years, it's those third down conversions, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8s that they gave up so repeatedly. And this year, they've been much better. You know, get off the field, get the ball back. Good things happen.
All right, Ben Roethlisberger, second half of the season. First half, he had 10 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, David. Give me some numbers for the second half of the season.
Let's go 15-6. I mean, Ben's due to play better, and those aren't crazy numbers. That's not 2 a game. The interceptions, I assume, should definitely get cut down. So, if he's 15-6, that'll portend good things. That's where I'll go.
I like it. I'm right there with you. Write me down for what you have. These games, most of these games are going to be at home during the second half of the season. I think he gets off to a good second half start in this game against the Colts. I think he gets a deep ball going against the Colts defense. It's allowed a lot of deep passes this year as well. So limit those interceptions. I think the touchdowns are going to be there. So I like it. Put me down for 15-6 as well. Let's get to one email before we close out this show. This is from, I'm going to say this wrong. Is it Elias? I don't even know what symbol they call that over the O. Are you looking at this in Elias Eporson? I'm sorry, Elias, if I got this wrong, but he's at the University of Copenhagen. I used to dip Copenhagen.
Ah, yes. Yes. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess he goes to school where they make the dip.
I think you said Elias Eporson. Yeah, I think you did a reasonable job on that.
All right. I don't know what state Copenhagen's in, but since you asked for topic suggestions, I have a topic I'd love for you to discuss for a couple minutes. I think discussing how stats are used when discussing teams and players. Some general points you have would be fine, but I have some as well. Are stats overused, over-reliance compared to tape study for fans and media, respectively? Media is just now getting better at dealing with stats, aren't they, David?
Yeah, I think people are pretty attuned now because football stats haven't changed much. They're not a lot of kind of newly created stats that baseball's seen with WAR and a bunch of things that follow on from that. So I think people understand. There are some new ones that people have put together, but I just think people understand that, as Dave's pointed out many times, it just the averages are just not all that good. You need to look at – you need to put numbers in context. That's what QBR tries to do versus passer rating. I think we've become more advanced about how we think about things for sure.
I think it's okay to do I love in-depth stat studies, but you still have to have the tape there to figure out the why. A lot of it, coverage breakdowns. Are stats over? I guess what his question: are stats overused? Over? No, I don't think they're over relied upon yet. I think we're getting to an area though where people be with the Pro Football Focus and Football Outsiders, where people are getting a little bit too relaxed and thinking, I'll just look at the stats and not look at the tape. If that makes sense. All right. He says, conversely, have we gotten a lot further? Have we got a lot further to go and could be using stats indexes better in future interpretation as well? Yes. I think Next Gen Stats is doing a great job with taking us to the next level there. It's got me excited. I think there's more stats coming down the line that'll make us interpret a little bit better what's happening on the tape or should be. Do an even better job of backing up what's on the tape. What are some of my favorite stats that are underappreciated? adjusted net yards per passing attempt. If you listen to this show, you know I love that. I also like that Next Gen Stats. That one with the adjust with the intended air yards versus average. Completed air yards. I think that's great. I'd like to see more focus be put on wide receiver passing stats, if you will. A better job of coming up with a quarterback rating, if you will, for wide receivers. I know some are already breaking ground in that area. He says, what are some of the over misused stats that people perhaps interpret or use incorrectly? The old quarterback rating, right, David? I mean,
yeah, quarterback ratings. Today, particularly in an environment where guys, as you pointed out, even the Goffs and the Wentzes, but Dak and different guys, Cam Newton's a perfect example. Guys who use their legs, that's not incorporated. It's just passer rating it was a great stat when it was founded 40 years ago to try and put something about throwing the football, but we know that's just not all there is to it. And contextual stuff, the Blake Bortles fourth quarter stuff versus what happens early in the game, you need to have some context. So QBR is not perfect, and it's a little bit more difficult to understand, even though passer rating's not exactly transparent either. But I think it's a better thing to use.
Yeah, and he says, any other stats usages that you want to hit? And I think when you get to the running back position, I think we got to do a better job of, and they are, yards after contact and stuff like that. I think we have a ways to go maybe with some productivity as far as running back stats go.
Defensive stats, there are two defensive stats that really the only people look at, and it's interceptions and it's sacks. And I just, there is, not that those aren't important stats. They're incredibly important. They're game-changing plays oftentimes. But I think what we miss is I think we know who the elite players are and we know who the bad players are defensively. But the gradation in between the top five and the bottom five, we don't have a statistical way to evaluate that. That's got to be watching guys play, and it's hard to watch every guy in the NFL play. So I think we're short on doing really good evaluative stuff on guys defensively in terms of a way to put it, quantify it, other than watching tape. And you got to really honestly, if you want to watch defenses, if you want to understand defenses and defensive players, you really have to watch a lot.
Right, I think missed tackles should be a league-wide stat. Quite honestly, I think sacks should be great. I think that, you know, I think you ought to be able to look at a player's stat sheet on NFL.com and be able to say, okay, he had, you know, sure he had four sacks, but what's the score of those sacks? You know,
yeah, I mean, you know, they're obviously the perfect example of that is James Harrison's four sack game against the Colts, ironically, on that, you know, the Steelers, you know, night game where they blew him out by 35 points and he got three in the fourth quarter. Colts are trying to come back. They changed their quarterback. They're not going to go down on James's 85 sacks or whatever it is. They're not going to look any different, but they weren't impactful in terms of the game.
What do you think the NFLPA would – do you think the NFLPA wants more stats or less stats?
That's a good question, you know, because they're going to be guys on both ends of the spectrum. So I don't know that I have a good answer to that.
Yeah, but look, we're getting there, and it's happening faster and faster every year, it seems like. So, Elias, that you know, great question, and nobody likes to talk stats probably more than I do. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks for listening from Denmark. Couple big games here for Denmark trying to qualify for the World Cup. So good luck trying to get into the World Cup here over the next 4 or 5 days.
All right. Great show, David. I know it didn't go the way we thought it might go, but I think it turned out okay there. And I know you've got some business to get to this afternoon. Hopefully we'll have a beat writer from the Colts with us on Friday. And look, if you want to, David, Twitter, you can have something like 460 characters now in a Twitter post. Look out.
Somebody said if I wanted 280 characters, I'd read Game of Thrones.
Look out, they gave me, that's more song lyrics from me coming on Twitter, and I'm sure there's going to be some rants mixed in there as well. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, and I don't know why the hell you would, at Steelers Depot. If you want to follow David Todd on Twitter, at David M. Todd. If you want to follow the show at Terrible Podcast, email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate and help the cause, if you like what we do here and you know, want to help out you know, some financial ways there, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. And who knows, one of our listeners is still upset that I stutter so much, so maybe if we get enough, I can get some sort of surgery or whatnot. Where,
Some lessons.
Yeah, some lessons there. David, I enjoyed it. I'll talk to you on Friday.
Yeah, and just for our Irish friends who are listening, I'm not rooting for Denmark. It's Ireland and Denmark in a home and home coming up on Saturday and Tuesday. So go Ireland, go Denmark. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.